How are you getting on with that mitre saw?
That's a good question. And one I've been considering making a video about, actually, because I'm putting together a vlog video where I think it's going to be like an update of loads of different projects, because I've had a couple of things fail recently that I've built in the past, and I think that would make for interesting viewing. I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss the mitre saw. In fact, I did a job last week, which will be in a video where I used the mitre saw, but that's because I've still got it, but I'm just going to use it when I go out and about rather than in the workshop. But yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's still too early really to say, but I think I'm going to be fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got two mitre saws, and they're sat in my shed, and I could go and get, and I've got a stand, I could go and get them out and set them up. But the time you've done all that, unless you need to make 40 repeatable cross cuts or something, it's just not worth the time.
Yeah.
But I'm going to keep one. Because when you come to do the construction, like when I build my 17th shed or something, it'd be really useful for that kind of thing, especially being battery, to have it permanent. Even if I got the smallest, let's say if I got the 8-inch Festool Capex with the board rails, it still takes up so much room
Yeah.
in my little workshop. And I actually find without a mitre saw station, if you're just rough cutting something, there's other ways of rough cutting things. It's only the mitre saw station that makes it a useful woodworking tool with repeatable cuts.
I suppose the other alternative is if you're on site and you've got those roller stands that are adjustable in height and things
Yeah.
like that. But yeah, you do need a whole setup in order to use it efficiently, I feel. And
Yeah.
it was interesting as well that a lot of the comments on that video I got were people just saying, so basically, you're getting rid of the mitre saw because your workshop's too small. So I'm assuming most of these people are American, I guess, because it's not a small workshop for the
No.
UK. It's, I would say, medium to large for the UK.
Yeah.
Most people are working in single garages or sheds.
We know a couple of people that have run commercial businesses out of smaller spaces.
Exactly, Peter Millard being one, yeah.
Yeah, and Andy Mack as
Yep.
well. What we have that other people don't have is the filming stuff. It's amazing how much room that takes up.
It is, yeah.
But yeah, it must be nice having the extra space.
Yes. I'm definitely enjoying the extra space. I found I'm using the bandsaw a lot more as well, which is kind of nice because I think when we talked about tools we might have to get rid of in a
Yeah.
previous episode, the bandsaw was on the list for me, but now I'm using it a lot more.
Yeah, that's strange because it's like my favourite tool. Like even though I'm the table saw guy, I'd probably rather get rid of the table saw than the bandsaw.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I could probably get away with the bandsaw and a track saw,
Yeah.
but I use the table saw the most because it's just so
It
easy.
is, and it's quick as well,
But there's
yeah.
so many cuts you couldn't do on the table saw and you can do on the bandsaw.
Yeah, if you had all the time in the world, a bandsaw would be the better choice than a table saw, really, wouldn't
Yeah,
it?
yeah. People often ask me, why are you not resawing on the bandsaw? I'm like, well, table saw's so much quicker
Yeah.
and probably leaves a nicer finish as well.
Yeah.
Unless you're resawing something really wide. But yeah, you're not that keen, but you've and this probably one of your oldest bits of machinery, isn't it?
It was the first big tool I bought, perhaps other than the DeWalt table saw, the DW745. I don't regret the purchase of that bandsaw, and in fact, I've always thought it was pretty decent. But there are things about it that I'm not that keen on, like the fact that you have to remove the fence rail in order to change the blade, and then recalibrate the fence again. That's such a stupid design when you think about it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I never use the fence anyway on a bandsaw, so it's really not an issue for me. The guide bearings aren't great either in terms of setting them up. They can be very difficult to see, and but I don't know whether that's all bandsaws because I haven't got any experience with any others.
The lower ones are always a nightmare.
Yeah.
But yeah, some are toolless.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think a lot of the ones with thumb screws, like that's yeah, what you need.
Such a great idea.
But it's amazing what an old kind of tool the bandsaw is. You know, they've been around for over 100 years, and yet people are still tweaking them. The dust collection ports are like an afterthought a lot of the time. But I think a lot of the top of the range ones, they have the double dust collection ports and the thumb screws and
Yeah.
tensioning levers that actually seem to work.
Yeah. I'm still using my original insert plate as well. Stupid plasticky thing that has a lot of deflection in it that really bothers me. And makes me kind of want to get some kind of brass plate similar to what Jimmy Duresti uses. I'm assuming he just makes his. I don't know whether I could do that with the tools I've got. Or even maybe like a 3D printed plastic plate that's thick and it's got kind of ribs in it so that it's rigid.
Yeah.
It could definitely be a lot better than it is.
I definitely made a new one for the first bounce I had because I think a couple of times it jumped out.
Oh, really?
And then it got chewed up a bit.
Ooh.
And I think it was just a solid bit of plastic, so I drilled some holes in so there's actually dust collection through the plate.
Yeah.
Which I think my new one already has holes in it, which seems a good idea. I think insert plates are a problem on everything, aren't they? Like table saws.
They seem to be. Yeah.
How do they not come with a zero insert plate?
Yeah, and why did table saw designers not design them in a way so that insert plates can easily be made, or even why don't they make insert plates to go with them that they could sell?
Yeah. 20 quid, something reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd spend 20 quid rather than faffing around trying to make something that worked.
Absolutely, I would too, yeah. It's this logic of, you know, you're a woodworker, why don't you just make it? That works a lot of the time. Things like workbenches, I don't think I'd ever buy a workbench because I think I'd be too particular about what I wanted it to do. And also, if I really wanted something special, it's going to cost me thousands and thousands of pounds. Yeah. So it makes sense to make one. But yeah, things like insert plates, they're so annoying to make.
Yes. Yeah, I've done a couple of bodges recently. I think it was in the pizza pill video. I just shoved a bit of MDF on and clamped it on and raised the blade through it.
I saw that, yeah.
And I was doing one the other day, thin ribs, and I just got some brown paper packing tape and put it over.
Over the slot kind of thing.
Over the slot and raised the blade through the packing tape. And because the thin strips were just so minute, they had no weight to them. Well, obviously, they had weight to them, but you know, they're nothing that packing tape wouldn't hold. Like, wow, that was such an easy fix.
Yeah.
Rather than them getting sucked down into the blade.
Really enjoyed that pizza peel video and the loaf of bread that came out of it. That looked incredible.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's something I've been wanting to make for years and years, but I was reluctant to do anything in my kitchen because my kitchen's a state. But as I was going to my mum's, like, I'm going to do that. And I've left it there and she's got it hung on her wall. I should have put my branding on it. I've got two branding irons and I forget to use them. I mean, I can't remember the last time I used them. Every project, I finish it and think, should have put my brand on it.
I'm the same. And actually, I went to use mine a couple of weeks ago and it broke. It's because obviously the branding part itself is brass. There's a really thin rod that goes to it, that goes into like a 12 mil rod. So it's like, I would say it's about 6 mil into a 12 mil rod, and the 6 mil part just broke off. But I got in touch with the guy that made it for me and said, it broke. Is there any way this can be fixed? Is it something that could be tapped out and then a new rod inserted into it or something? Mm. Not really knowing much about this stuff. And he said, oh, those brass rods that I was selling ages ago, we've moved on from that a long time ago. We're doing steel now. So yeah, I've ordered one of them from him, one of the upgrades. So yeah, hopefully that'll be back in action soon.
Yeah, maybe what I need to do is like make a tool holder for it and have it right above my bench so I stare at it throughout the project.
Have you got one of the soldering iron ones?
Yes, I've got both. I've got the one you have to heat up. That's what I got first. But that's significantly bigger. It's probably three times the size of the soldering iron one. So I've got two sizes. The soldering iron one, they're good, but I assumed they'll just get to the correct heat and then kind of maintain that heat. But it's more of a
build up.
Yeah, build up. And then, oh, I think that's right. That's good. But then you use it a few times and it's too cold. There's definitely a bit of a technique to it, isn't there?
Yeah, and I also think this could be a good tip for anyone considering getting a branding iron. The first one I had was rectangular. It was probably about, I would say, about 80 mil long by about 40 mil wide.
Mm.
And I found over time, because it had one central support in the middle, over time, obviously heating it up and using it a lot, it kind of cupped.
Yeah.
So the edges were higher than the middle part, and then I kind of had to keep rocking it to get a good print. And then obviously if you're rocking it, you can skew it slightly and throw it off, and then you end up having to sand it back, and it's just a real pain. So I'm definitely into the either circular or square ones now rather than the rectangular ones.
Yeah, my small circular one works fine. I think also I've tried the different things of wetting the wood first. You done that?
I haven't, no. What is that supposed to do?
I have no idea. I think the manufacturer just said, I think I tried it once and they're like, oh, I'm not sure. I can be bothered to add that extra step, but I don't think it does anything. But giving it a little sand afterwards definitely makes it look better as well, doesn't it? It neatens it up. I didn't realise that at first. No, they're cool things and they're amazingly cheap.
Yeah.
For what they are. I mean, you can get them off Amazon from some far off place, but people are going to ask where we got them from. But the two I've got are both from... actually, I remember the first one is Artisan Stamps, but they're both British small businesses.
First one I bought was on Etsy. And that was like a Chinese thing, I think. And it was like 35 quid or something. Yeah. Really cheap. That was one of the ones that you manually hit up with a blowtorch. And that was the rectangular one that cupped, but I don't think it was a fault of the manufacturer. It was a fault of my design kind of thing.
Mm.
Outpost Workshop is where the second one came from. Yeah, Outpost Workshop. Yeah.
And they've just got an Instagram account. I think that's how I dealt with them.
And like I say, great service as well, because obviously I had the problem with mine breaking recently. Mm. Got in touch with him and he's sending me a new kit. And I haven't paid for it either. He said, I'll send you the new kit, which is very kind and the kind of customer support you wish you got from some of the bigger companies.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's nothing wrong with the blowtorch ones. If all you're doing is making one thing and putting one brand on it, I would say that's probably all you need. It's when I was doing the kind of manufacturing and wanted to do 40 stamps, then soldering iron one worked well.
Yeah, I bought a pretty expensive soldering iron to heat up my newer branding iron that broke. And I've got to say, it takes a surprisingly long time to heat up as well. You could easily heat up a blowtorch one quicker and get your print on. But like you say, if you're doing a batch of something, that's when the soldering iron one really comes into play, doesn't it? Because you can just bosh out 40 items at once. So what have you been working on lately?
I've done a couple of bread-related projects. Again, because I knew I was going to my mum's for a week. She's hopefully getting a dog. So she's got like a picket fence, but there's maybe 20 centimetres under it at some points because it's all up and down. So I was like, oh, we'll just get some gravel boards and stick them in. So I went there with all my tools to do that, and literally I bought 1.8 metre long gravel boards and put screws in. There was no cutting whatsoever.
it wasn't really a video worthy.
It was definitely not a video. But then it's one of those things you go, I'm going to do it this way. And then you look at it and then you go, no, I'm going to do it this way. And you change your mind on how you're going to do it. And then I ended up doing it in such a simple way. I mean, it might be a funny video because I had to go around the other side into what was a pub and their car park. And they got loads of brambly bushes. And there's me kind of scrambling through these like getting pricked all over. So people might have enjoyed me being tortured.
The amount of projects I've started before that I've just dismissed as being too boring and not filmed and then later regretted.
Oh, yes.
Has that happened to you?
Oh, I'm staring at one now. I've got, I think I showed it to you, that glass cabinet I've got in my living room. And I started to take it apart because my mum wanted it. And then she's like, oh, no, you have it. And I'm like, oh, well, this could have been a video then. But now I'm annoyed because it looking awful with 40-year-old fabric stuck to it and things. I've taken that all off. You needed for a video, you needed to see it looking really awful.
Yeah.
So I saw your video last week about planar thicknesses.
Yes.
And normally when you do these type of videos, and you made the same point, that I would go, I don't know, I would want that one.
Yeah.
But when you laid it all out, it's like, yeah, I don't know which one I'd go for. They're a bit like table saws. There's no perfect one. They've all got, you want kind of want a feature of this one and a feature of that one.
Yeah.
Because surely if we want those things, everyone else wants those things as well.
Exactly right. I guess the overwhelming feedback that came from the video was just get the electrical work done, which I can understand. And now that point has been hammered into me so much, it does make sense. Mm. And I've also been speaking to my friend who's a Sparky about the safest way of doing it, because a bunch of people just said, I'll just plug in a splitter lead, and as long as you don't run the two machines at the same time.
I was just going to say the same thing, because you're never going to run the two machines together, are you?
No, in theory, not. But when I spoke to my friend about it, he said, he's not like other Sparkies I've met, because they, all of the professional electricians I've hired tend to cut a lot of corners, whereas my mate does everything by the book. So he kind of said it can be done like that, but it's not best practice. So he has come up with an alternative solution with something called a changeover switch.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have a switch on my central pillar in the workshop to switch between the two machines, which sounds like a good solution. And I've priced it all up and everything, and it's not mega money or anything. So I think I'm going to do that, unless I go for one of the 13 amp options.
I guess that way, does it mean you have to have a cable running across the floor?
I'm just going to put it up on the pillar, through the ceiling, over and across, and then down. I think it'll be easy enough to do. And we'll use SWA cable for it as well, so it'll be armoured cable. We haven't got to mess about with trunking or anything.
And you'll still be able to unplug it at the splitter for when you want to do maintenance and things. It won't be hardwired in.
No, it'll be a socket thing still.
Yeah, that sounds like a good solution.
I just didn't want to ask him for another favour, because he's helped me out so much, do you know what I mean?
Well,
it's like I owe him a bunch of favours now, but he hasn't asked me to do any yet, so I don't feel like I should ask him for one again.
You are paying him though.
I've paid him in the past, but with my best mates and my family, like my brother, for example, always helps me out whenever I need it, and then I'll help him out on something, and then it's easier that way. No money changes hands. No one's got to feel awkward. We just help each other out when another pair of hands is needed. And speaking of which, I mean, my brother helped me out with a paving slab project recently, and then I had to fit some new fence panels at my old property, for which I'm a landlord, the one that I used to live in, where the old workshop was. So I had to fit some fence panels there, and he spent half a day with me there fitting them as well. And then last week, he came up with this wacky idea to light up his coving around his living room with some LED lights. And I thought, this sounds interesting. Maybe this could be a video. So I went and did that, and that'll be out soon as well. That was quite an interesting project, because it was one of those ones where I was thinking, this is another silly idea that my brother's had. And I didn't really think it was going to look good, but I thought, I'll film it just in case, kind of thing. But it ended up turning out great, and now I kind of want to do the same thing in our dining room, because our dining room is in the middle of the bungalow, and it's got no natural light other than the light that comes in from adjacent rooms, kind of thing. So I think it'd look really cool in there. So I'm starting to think about doing something similarly myself.
I'm a big fan of kind of, I don't know how you call it, indirect light. Like, I hate having the overhead lights on.
Oh,
like
me too, yeah.
Lamps and lights to the side.
Especially in the evening, it's so much more cosy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing about LEDs, you just change the colour temperature, don't you? As in, so I'm filming now, I've got everything, bulbs that would be described as bright white.
Yeah.
But in the evenings, it's horrific, sat in bright white. It's horrible. You want the warm colours. So anything that can change colour temperature is wonderful.
Yeah, and also change power as well, because these are dimmable. They're like 20, 40, 60, 80, 100%. And you could just tone it down to 20 or 40 in the evening, and it'd be really nice and subtle.
And you get the ones with the bright colours that flash, so you can have a disco as well. When you get into having kids' parties, these are all things to look forward to.
Oh, God, that sounds like hell.
I worry for the cats then. That's when the catio comes in handy. They hide in there.
But yeah, going back to the planar thicknesses, I was of the mindset that one of the new helical head record power machines would be the best option. But when you look at the cheapest one that has a similar number of blades to the Axminster, about 24-ish from memory, the record power is then £100 more expensive, and it's got two bed lift as opposed to one bed lift of the Axminster. So then the Axminster looks like the better option. And then obviously the more expensive record power that has like 44 blades or something like that, that's £2,000. And again, it's got the two bed lift. So I don't think that's going to be the best option for me. And I'm now looking at the Charnwood PT10S, which is incidentally the only machine I've actually seen in person, because we've got a machine shop here in Norwich that I've only ever been to once in my whole life, but I went there again a couple of weeks ago, and had a look at it in person, and it looks like a really nice machine. The trouble is, it's out of stock in most places.
Oh,
it's
like, no. Oh.
So now I don't know what to do.
And of course, you've got one Charmwood machine you've had for a long time and happy with, and yeah. I actually remember you've had a bit of problems with Record Power machines.
I have, yeah. I haven't had a great experience with Record Power over the years, but I think that could just be me. I also got one guy write to me really angrily last week about the fact that I was being biased against Axminster. And it kind of got me thinking, well, maybe I am a bit biased against Axminster, but that's because they won't respond to my emails. It's a big investment, but when I think about all of the tools I've got for free over the years, it's really not a big deal. And also, like I said in the video, I want kind of like a forever tool type thing. Yeah. I want to treat myself. I want something nice that I can use and enjoy. Hello, it's Editing Keith here. I just need to point out that I'm about to say Harvey a bunch of times when actually what I mean is Hammer. Harvey is a different brand entirely. Anyway, back to the podcast. Oh, the other piece of overwhelming feedback was kind of positivity towards Harvey. I meant Hammer. And they're a brand that I don't really know much about.
Oh, yeah. Or
Felder Group, I should say, which I think is the parent company. But I hate to say that that kind of positivity is misplaced, but when you look at the machines, they do look basically the same.
Mm.
Everyone's kind of got a bias against things that are made in China. But I think, you know, yes, there's loads of tat that comes from China, but it's tat because the person that's requested that to be made for them has put in a low price point. So
yeah.
The Chinese have made it to that spec. China is capable of producing high-end stuff as well as low-end stuff. Just because something's built in Austria or built in the UK or built in the USA doesn't mean it's any good. There are so many examples of things like cars that are made in the UK that are, I mean, minis, for example. I constantly hear about the terrible build quality of minis.
Oh, really?
But everyone's like, oh, they're made in the UK. Yeah, big deal. It doesn't mean they're good.
So are Harvey tools available in the UK now? I didn't even know that.
Just to clarify, Harvey machines are not available in the UK. Again, I'm about to talk about Hammer. They are, and apparently there's a... Carl from Strawberry Workshop commented on the video saying they've got a headquarters in Milton Keynes.
Oh, wow.
Near to him. So I did think about maybe doing a road trip, because Milton Keynes is one of those places I've always wanted to go and explore anyway.
Oh, it's very you, yeah. Go see the concrete cows.
Yeah, so I started doing a bit more research about the Harvey machine. Once again, I meant Hammer. But I found another video of somebody reviewing it where he said that the capacitor burnt out and smoke came from the machine really quickly. And then when he talked about the customer service with Felder, he said it was actually really bad.
I mean, I've forgotten who a woodworking channel, I think Northern European. I really can't remember his name or where he's from. But he bought the Felder or the Hammer. It's table saw, bandsaw and planer, and like, I mean, it must be £10,000, the combination, and they were all in just terrible condition.
Yeah.
Did you watch the same
thing? Was Andrea's workshop.
That's it.
Yeah. I remember watching that video when it came out. I mean, that was years ago now, I think, because they were just ignoring him at one point, I think.
Yeah. And you spent so much money on a premium, you know, like industrial quality brand and no customer service. So Charmwood have a head office as well.
I have no idea where.
Well, I'm just looking. It's north. It's on just off the M1, north of Leicester. So it's not close, but kind of. If you was going to Milton Keynes, it's maybe only an hour more up the M1 from there.
Yeah, I think if I was to buy one, I would just use this local woodworking machinery place in Norwich. But
yeah.
The trouble is, it's more expensive there.
I
think it's 150 quid more than elsewhere. So. Maybe I'll have to chat to them and see if they might do me a bit of a discount or something.
Well, it would be quite interesting just in a vlog to go to there and look at it.
I did consider doing something like that because they actually do blade sharpening, blade resharpening. I thought they got all of the blades in and just sent them off site and then got them back and returned them to you. But no, they do it all on site apparently. So that's interesting.
I think the only independent kind of machine shop I've been to is Yandel's.
Yeah. What was that like?
It's a great place. I mean, the wood yard is amazing.
So they do hardwoods as well, do they?
I think that's what they were. They were a sawmill.
Ah.
But yeah, no, they have like all the bins of like the scrap and the ends, and like you pick something up for 50p. I think I bought like a 2.5 meter long piece of ash. it was just like an inch square for like a pound or something.
Yeah.
Thinking I was going to make a longbow, and then it sat in my shed in the old house, and then I left it there when I moved. But no, there was some real, yeah, it was the best woodyard I've ever been to by far.
So where is Yandles?
It's Somerset.
Okay.
They did a festival, or they were doing festivals a few years ago, and so for the first time they kind of did a maker's corner.
Yeah.
And invited a few makers to come down. But I kind of went with my friend and we camped. And we kind of had like a little maker's corner in the campsite just by accident. Everyone kind of stayed in the same bit. So we sat around the barbecue in the evenings. It was really, really nice.
Nice.
But the fair was, I've been to Maker Central and people recognise you and want to talk to you there. Yandles was lots of old men who liked wood turning.
Yeah.
And not one person over 2 days had a clue who I was or wanted to talk to me or anyone else in Maker's Corner. So it was just a kind of a waste of time us going. But it was an interesting place. If you're ever that way, it's worth calling in.
Yeah, I just wish there were more of these places across the UK.
Yeah, well, I think, unfortunately, there's probably less and less every year. I think even Axminster have closed a few of their stores. So you mentioned doing some fencing at the old house where the old workshop was. Is the workshop still there? I'm sure it I must is. Have asked you that before.
Yeah.
Is it being used or is it just storage?
Yeah, it's being used as like an exercise room. There's like an exercise bike and some other stuff in there, I think.
What a terrible waste.
Well, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, when I think about how long it's been there now, I'm surprised it's still intact. Because I did not build that in the right way. There are so many things I did wrong.
Well, I'm sure people told you.
Yeah, I don't know if they did, actually. This was the early days of YouTube when everyone was being nice. like using 2x2s as the floor bearers. I mean, they're not even treated. I think I just applied some stain to them. You've reminded me of a story, actually, when you mentioned my old workshop that I don't think I've ever told before. And it's quite an interesting one, I think. So when I lived in my old terraced house, as you know, I love my salvaged wood and I always wanted a space to store all of the stuff that I could salvage so that I could use salvaged wood in my projects rather than going out and buying wood. So I hired a lockup, like a small garage. I think it was like 50 quid a month. And it was about a 10-minute drive from my house. So it's quite convenient. But it was in a bit of a rough area. I was renting this place and I filled it to the brim with materials. I think maybe the third or fourth time I went there, I opened up the door and inside was a mattress on the floor and a suitcase. Actually, no, it wasn't a suitcase. It was like a hold-all bag type thing. And I was so confused. And I don't know, like, I've never been robbed or anything, but I think I know the feeling of coming home. I think I have that feeling then, because it's like someone's been in my space. What's going on? And I just, it felt horrible. I kind of like just had a look in this bag and there was like clothing, deodorant. There was an old sandwich wrapper thing. So I called the estate agents. And basically, they had given the key for my garage to someone else. They were renting it twice. And the guy who was renting it out had clearly been living there. It was the most baffling thing. So I kind of spoke to them and I said, so what's going on? How are you going to resolve this issue? And you know how useless estate agents are. I'm sure you've had your fair share of badly rented properties.
I still got PTSD.
Yeah. They eventually figured out that they'd given him the wrong key, so they had another garage to rent, but they'd given him the wrong key. I think about a week passed and they'd kind of not done anything, so I ended up calling them and all my stuff is in that garage and someone's living there.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to just be okay with that, and I'm paying rent on the place. It's crazy. And I said, aside from anything, someone's living in a garage and that's not right, you know. Yeah. You've rented a garage for someone to live in. So eventually they basically said, right, we've spoken to the guy and you can remove the stuff. And I was like, what do you mean I can remove the stuff? This stuff needs to be collected. It's someone's belongings. And they kind of said, well, you've got two options. You can either remove the stuff or we can come and collect it. And in the end I just said, I'll just remove the stuff, because like I want to be able to lock the door, know that I've got the key and no one else can get in there anymore. So that's what happened in the end. I had to take a random bag full of someone's belongings and a mattress to the dump and dump it. But it's just so bizarre. And I never got to tell that story to anyone.
That is quite an unbelievable story.
If anyone is in Norwich, the estate agent is called Pym and Co. So
yeah.
If you want to avoid those, I'd highly recommend steering clear.
Jeez. It's the fact they made that mistake and then they're just so indifferent to the problem that is just shocking, isn't it? Because if like we'd made that mistake, we'd just be mortified and then drop everything to try and solve it. And they're like, oh no, just not... I don't know what you're moaning at. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost as if, oh, this has happened before. It's no big deal.
Hello, Matt here. It takes us quite a lot of time to prepare and produce each episode of this podcast, and we'd like to keep putting it out for free. If you enjoy the podcast and you'd like to help, support and shape future episodes, you can find a link to our Patreon page in the show notes or just search online for Workshop Banter Patreon. Thank you, and now back to the podcast.
There's a couple of woodworking projects that I really want to get my teeth into soon. They're both quite big projects, but I don't want to start them until I get my new planar thicknesser. You know, if I make them now and then get a new planar thicknesser, it's like, oh man, I could have used the new. So I'm kind of putting them off. But yeah, I need to make a cot for Baby Brown. And I want to make an oak dining table as well, an extending oak dining table, which I know I talked about ages and ages ago. And I've got a pile of oak that's sat there ready to be milled up. And I really want to get my teeth stuck into it. But I opened up my wood storage, the front of my workshop, the wood storage area, the other day for a different project. And I just stared at the pile of wood for ages, trying to figure out how I was going to make what I wanted to make, which was like a bent laminated firewood rack for the house. And I just felt really uninspired. I just felt really like, I can't figure out how I'm going to do it. I've already sat there trying to draw up a 3D sketch of what I want to do, and I just can't practically figure out how it's going to work. I ended up just shutting the workshop door and coming back indoors and editing a video instead. And it made me think about, oh God, because every winter I seem to get this period of burnout. And it's like, is this the start of another burnout period? I really hope it isn't. So what have you been watching, Matt?
I don't know if I've ever mentioned him before. He's more of a... Well, he's got a YouTube channel, but most of the things have been shorts and in vertical format because he's definitely more onto the more social media thing. Jack Forsberg. I can't remember where he is. He's North America. I can't remember if he's America or Canada. But he has a fantastic workshop full of old English woodworking machines like... Watkins and things like that. He restores them. He's got the most beautiful table saw. It's just a work of art, and he's a super master craftsman doing beautiful work on beautiful machines and just so knowledgeable. And then what I always think is funny, then he gets a power tool out to use and he's got this Ryobi drill, and like, what you've got? But with all our planar thicknesser talk, it made me think of his, because watching him push these massive bits of timber over this like 14 inch wide planer that if it went in my workshop, it'd probably tip the whole thing over.
So I didn't catch his surname, Jack.
Forsberg. He's at Jack English Machines because he uses old English machines.
But he's American. I wonder how he got them all over there. Are they available? I think
I can see now that he's got a .ca after his thing, so Canadian.
Oh, Canadian.
Maybe at one point, like 100-something years ago, they actually used to export them. It is strange how we've talked about, is it Harvey Machines?
Yeah.
Because I always associate them as being American. I think you can get most things now in both countries, but it used to be very much that in America you had all the jet machinery and the Powermatic and things, and they weren't available here. We had Record Power and Charmwood.
Mm.
As now, I think you can get some of the Record Power stuff in America, and you can definitely get Jet and Charmwood and Laguna and things like that here.
Yeah.
What have you been watching?
I came across a new channel called GT Woodshop. I say new, it's new to me anyway. But he did a video called Why is Hardwood So Hard to Buy? So it's a UK-based channel, which is always nice because it's a bit more relatable. It just talks very honestly about some of the problems we encounter in the UK. We've talked about these things before, but he's gone a bit into a lot of the pricing detail about what he's paying for specific woods, the stuff that's easy to get in the UK, like ash, beech, edigbo, iroko, maple, oak, uteel, and walnut. And then he talks about the cost of all of the more exotic timbers like Purple Heart, Padauk, Wenge, cherry. And he talks about the cost of those and how that cost relates to what he makes and produces and sells online, and how unfeasible it is, kind of thing. But yeah, I just found it a really interesting video. And then I dug deeper into his channel and he's got the Harvey... I got the name wrong. He's got the hammer machine. Is it Hammer or Harvey? Have we been saying Harvey?
There's two different machines, two different companies.
Are they both Felder?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I've lost my bearings.
Hammer or Felder. I think Harvey might be some Asian thing. Because I remember that they put some social media posts up of scantily clad women posing with their things. And they had a bit of a backlash and deleted them all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's got the Hammer A341 planar thicknesser, and he talks about a fault that he had with it quite early on with a capacitor burning out and lots of smoke coming from the machine, and the experience he had trying to get it repaired. So yeah, they're the only two videos on his channel that I've watched so far, but I'm going to delve a bit deeper because yeah, it's always great to find a new UK woodworking channel, and he's a nice relatable guy. So that's GT Woodshop. I just can't remember whether I was saying Harvey earlier on.
You definitely said Harvey, and I didn't correct you because obviously Harvey is a...
I'll just have to go and overdub it all in the podcast. Hammer.
But I think Hammer are like the cheaper version of the Felders, aren't they?
Right.
But they're not cheap.
They're not cheap, but when you look at them compared to the competitors, they're about the same.
Right, yeah.
That's only based on the planar thicknesser that I've looked at. There might be other machines that are more expensive, I'm not sure.
Yeah, they're definitely high-end for the home use.
Yeah, and they seem to be very well regarded. A lot of the feedback I've had in the comments is to get the hammer.
It's like buying a cheap BMW rather than an expensive Ford, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, you do have to wonder whether they just use all of the same components.
Like the Harvey definitely looks... They look exactly the same as Laguna.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Laguna make a planer. Is that something you've seen?
I'm not sure they do, actually.
I just like how their tools look.
They do look cool. Black is always a good colour. It's like when I was looking at lathes, actually. The best looking lathes were by Rutland's because they're just jet black and they just look really, really nice. So Laguna do have a basic, like a lunchbox style thicknesser, but it doesn't look like they do a planar thicknesser combination machine.
I remember they had a very nice looking dust extractor and it was like £500, but it's basically exactly the same as the one you've got.
Yeah,
just nicer looking. Like,
this is the thing, are their machines genuinely better or are they just better at marketing?
Yeah, Darby Orva or whatever her name is, she had a Laguna something. They're good at sending them out to people.
Not in the UK, they're not.
Not in the UK, but there is only a few people that, like, I think Yandles sell Laguna stuff.
Well, they've got them in this Norwich shop.
Oh, do they?
I was quite surprised when I went in. They had a Laguna bandsaw. They might have had another machine as well.
Yeah.
I forget. But it's the first time I had a look at one.
I'd never looked at this hammer stuff. I'm really, because I'm sure last time I looked at the hammer stuff, it was like £3,000. I can't believe that it's £1,400 for...
It's pretty reasonable, yeah, when you look at the competition. Maybe we should take a field trip down to Milton Keynes and have a look.
Thank you for listening. You can find Keith on YouTube by searching for Rag N Bone Brown and me by searching for Badger Workshop. We have a Patreon page if you'd like to help support us in making future episodes of the podcast. Link to that in the show notes. And we have a Workshop Banter Instagram and Facebook page if you'd like to get in touch, which is @workshopbanter, all one word.